Supposedly, he was born in a mental institution, and he sleeps only 1 hour a night. He's a great man.
He becomes a myth, a spook story that criminals tell their kids at night.
He is such a badass.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you
the Ayatollah of Rock and Roller!
This could very well be the stupidest person on the face of the earth.
We rule the streets, snap the dog, felt inside as an Iger shot. The tall one that I got between my knees, my arm helps me to spread.
Now that I have you held tight, I will tell you a story. Speak soft in your ear so you know that it's true. You are my love at first sight, and though you're scared to be near me, my words penetrate your thoughts now in an intimate prelude. I looked in your eyes. They were so dark, warm, and trusting, as though you had not a worry or care. The more guileless the gaze, the better potential to fill up those pools with fear. Your face framed in dark curls like a portrait. The sun shone through highlights of red. What color, I wonder? And how straight will it turn plastered back with the sweat of your dread? Your wet lips were a promise of a secret unspoke. Nervous laugh as it burst like a pulse of blood from your throat. There will be no more laughter here. I feel your body tense up. My hand now on your shoulder. Your eyes search away out of this small dark room. Forget the lady called Luck. She does not abide near me, for her powers don't extend to those who are doomed. Precious pet, would that I could keep you, let you be the master of your own fate. What deal, I wonder, would you willingly stoop to, knowing full well what's at stake? My pretty captive butterfly, colorful wings my hand smears. Could I somehow repaint them with punishment and tears? Violent metamorphoses emerge, my dark princess. I would come often and worship on the altar of your flesh. You shudder now with revulsion and try to shrink far from me. I'll have you tied down and begging to become my Stockholm sweetie. Okay, talk is over. Words are placid and weak. Back it with action or it all comes off cheap. Watch close while I work now. Feel the electric shock of my touch. Open my trembling flower or your petals I'll crush. Those chilling, disturbing words were written by Israel Keyes, Alaskan serial killer responsible for at least 7 deaths. That poem was part of a 4-page rambling rant that was found by prison guards under his dead body, as he had slit his wrists and strangled himself in his cell. Why are serial killers so fascinating to us? Is it because they have the ability to intrigue and repulse at the same time? Is it because movies and TV portray killers as intelligent, powerful, even romantic figures? Or is it that they have gone to that dark place that lives inside of us all? That place most of us fear, but some of us have had the insanity or bravery to go. Speaking of dark places we fear to tread, welcome to Metal Punch, the only show that delivers a knuckle sandwich faster than Jimmy John's. It is I, Courageous Horageous, the man of the hour, here to take you by the hand and lead you down those dark corridors. So don't be afraid, I will protect you. Serial killers, mass murderers, homicidal cult leaders, spree killers, all subjects of many, many books, movies, TV shows, and yes, even heavy metal music. So today we are going to explore some of the darkest, evil, and diabolical minds as told to us by those metal minstrels. So hey, look, There's a killer now. Run!
We'll be right back. I'm thinking? Seriously? I'm thinking I'd like to take a brick and smash your fucking face in a fucking hamburger.
me psycho. And I don't like nobody touching my stuff. So just keep your meat hooks off. If I catch any of you guys in my stuff, I'll kill you. Also, I don't like nobody touching me. Now, any of you homos touch me, and I'll kill you.
You know, Chicago has produced its fair share of homegrown homicidal maniacs. Although not the most prolific, that honor would belong to California. Nor the sickest, that would have to be Wisconsin. But perhaps the producer of the most historic, most notorious. Starting way back in 1893, H.H. Holmes was the very first documented serial killer. You know, in the modern sense of the term. You can read all about his misdeeds and the symbiotic relationship his murders and the Chicago World's Fair had in the book Devil in the White City. In 1924, Leopold and Loeb, two University of Chicago students, though not serial killers, conspired, contrived, and committed murder simply in an exercise to try and pull off the perfect crime. The lipstick killer, William Herons, also a University of Chicago alum, whose murders terrorized the Northwest Side, so much so that schools and communities devised a safety program for children and young adults, which is the Stranger Danger program still in use today. He died in prison just last year. Richard Speck, who delighted in raping, torturing, and murdering nursing students, and perhaps one of the vilest and infamous of them all, the killer clown John Wayne Gacy. Now, all these folks have one thing in common. I mean, you know, other than the obvious that they are all sick, twisted fucks, and that they all were sprouted right here in Chicago, they have all had movies made about them. And they all suck. We'll be right back.
just appeared to be a fellow, you know, that I thought they were looking for because they had all these tattoos on him.
Did you check the tattoos?
Yeah, that was the first thing that I looked at. I looked at the article that I read. I remembered he had this one saying, in quotes, born to raise hell on his left arm.
Did you find it there?
Well, it was the left arm was covered with blood, so the other girls were working on him on the other side, starting an IV. So I took just some regular saliva and I just washed the blood off his arm, and a bee started coming out. And I got a little faster, and it started, said born, you know. So I went a little bit further, and it said born to raise hell.
We'll be right back. still like to kill him, though.
I bet you would.
I'd like to kill somebody.
Say that again.
I'd like to kill somebody.
That's when you go for a ride, Otis.
In the winter of 85, 86, Chicago film director John McNaughton, on a budget of $125,000, filmed a movie about a pathological mass murderer that was told in such flat, unforgiving realism that it inspired many an angry debate after screenings at film festivals and midnight showings here in Chicago, and other limited Midwest releases. Mired in the movie rating system for years, it wasn't until 1989 that the rest of the country finally got to see Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. It is a chilling film that, fair warning, will horrify many viewers and is intended to illuminate, not entertain. But it also is a very good film. A low-budget tour de force that provides an unforgettable portrait of the pathology of a man for whom killing is not a crime, but simply a way of passing the time and relieving boredom. Using unknown actors from the freewheeling organic theater company, and loosely inspired by the confessions of a self-described mass murderer named Henry Lucas, the film uses a slice-of-life approach to create a docudrama of chilling horror. Unlike typical slasher movies, Henry does not employ humor, campy in-jokes, or, you know, colorful anti-heroes. Filmed in the gray slush and wet winter nights of Chicago's back alleys, honky-tonk bars, and drab apartments, it tells of a drifter who kills strangers, efficiently and without remorse. The movie contains scenes of heartless and shocking violence, committed by characters who seem to lack the ordinary feelings of common humanity. Henry drifted in a cinematic no man's land after it was first seen publicly in a video version at the 1986 Chicago Film Festival, but could not gain mass distribution without the R rating, which it simply wasn't going to get without serious cuts being made. Organic theater veteran Tom Towles plays the equally chilling role of Otis, a casual friend who drifts into murder, and Tracy Arnold is Otis's sister, a teenage stripper who knows Henry killed his mother and finds the fact intriguing. In the film, Henry becomes the roommate of Otis, a parolee working in a gas station, and then the sister arrives from out of town and moves in. She is fascinated by Henry's stories of violence. Otis, who may have a homosexual interest in Henry, eventually goes along with him in a series of brutal killings, including one where they pretend to have car trouble and then shoot a Good Samaritan, and another where they invade a home and videotape the murder of an entire family. The videotape scene appalls many viewers, but at least it shows Henry dealing honestly with its subject matter, instead of trying to sugarcoat violence as most slasher films do. Some said the film was too violent and disgusting to be endured. Others said it was justified because of its uncompromising honesty in a world where most horror films cheapen death by trivializing it. The division seemed to be between those who felt the film did its job brilliantly, and those who felt, well, maybe its job should not have been done at all.
You love my work, the bitch I'll bleed. a mailbag. So what?
So what? Do you know whose mailbag that is?
David Berkowitz.
Son of Sam. The worst mass murderer the post office ever produced.
Where'd you get this?
I took over his route. And boy, were there a lot of dogs on that route.
You mean I'm talking to you?
Yeah, just to tell me to keep off the snacks.
The media has always bent, twisted, and oftentimes warped facts to get their message over, whether it be political or whatever. So why do I find it so surprising that there is so much inaccuracy when it comes to serial killers? Ask the average Joe to name five serial killers. More often than not, someone will toss in Charles Manson. You know how many people Manson killed? Zero. As in none. Conceived, coerced, and commanded the death of many to his followers, but he himself killed nobody. Not a very good serial killer in my book. Jeffrey Dahmer. Most will call him a cannibal, and understandably so, as he has been portrayed as such. Jeffrey was a very disturbed socio/psychopath who suffered from a dementia that made him dread the thought of lovers leaving him. He wanted them to stay with him forever, even if dead. He tried drilling into their brains to create some sort of love zombie who would always be at his side. But obviously, that didn't work. Ironically, however, the experiment killed the victims, making them gone forever. Another thought was to actually consume the flesh of a dearly departed. Hence, they would then become one. I guess he really didn't fully grasp the human digestive system and how it worked. But anyway, he tried a small piece of a victim's arm once. He became violently ill and never did it again. So let's see. Tried it once, puked, and never did it again. A sick, twisted fuck, sure. But hardly a cannibal. And of course, Ted Bundy. The killer elite who went down his murderous path because his mind was diseased from the most vile of stimuli, pornography. Ted was acting out sick and perverted acts he had seen in some of his favorite skin flicks. Unfortunately, he couldn't remember any of the titles, or actors, or even scenes from these life-altering stag films. Nor could he attest to where he would have gotten such materials in the 50s. But that didn't stop the religious right and the Mies Commission with their anti-porn crusade. I mean, as they say, why let the facts ruin a good story? When the feds raided Ted's house, they didn't find one scrap of porn in the whole place. They did find a few semen-stained junior majorette magazines, that is to say, junior high cheerleader uniform catalogs. But you can't go around banning clothing catalogs. There ain't no money in that. But misnomers, misconceptions, and misinformation such as this is really more norm than the exception. After all, if Dahmer is seen as a homo cannibal, all the better to drive home anti-gay propaganda. Bundy was a horn dog, and porn drove him to murder. Hallelujah! We now have our poster boy for our crusade against pornography and obscenity in general. If we come across something we don't like, whether it be art, a play, a comic book, a movie, just call it obscene and lock up the offenders. A definition, by the way, which grows more murky and obtuse as time goes on. Just talk to any pornographer out there. They'll tell you. The game changes to fit the opposition's needs when and how they want. Imagine going down a road with no posted speed limit and you're going, let's say, 55 miles an hour. You get pulled over by Johnny Blue, who cites you for speeding. He says it's a 40-mile-an-hour zone. Next day, same road. To be safe, you go a steady 35. Same cop, same deal. Cites you for speeding. But officer, you say, yesterday you told me it was a 40-mile-an-hour zone. That's right. Well, I was going 35. Yeah, well, yesterday it was brighter out. It's darker now, so I feel 30 miles an hour is appropriate for conditions. Well, how the hell was I supposed to know that? That's the key, kid. You're not.
I'll return from the ground.
And gents, it has become that time again when I must bid a fond adieu. I'd like to thank you all for stopping by and visiting. Please continue to send your emails and comments and suggestions and yabba dabba doo. So in parting, we're going to take a little twist here. The songs today were inspired by the killers in question. However, this song was the inspiration for the killer. You know, supposedly. As I stand here today, it seems as though the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez, may just beat his death penalty rap. After sitting on death row for years and years waiting for the state to send him into his beloved Satan's arms, it looks as though Mother Nature will beat them to the punch. Reportedly, Ramirez is in very poor health and will most likely, you know, with any luck, drop dead very soon. Ain't that a shame? We'll be right back.
Let's whack this cocksucker with